So let your colors run tonight. We're painting in the dark. Let your colors run tonight. The colors of your heart.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Catchy Lefty podcast. This is the week that we're going to talk about Lent 2. Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Jonathan Spring, and I'm joined by my good friend, Mr. Patrick Engel. What's up, Patrick?
Not much, Jonathan. How are you doing?
Doing good. Doing good. Excited for Lent. It's always a good season for us here at Catalyst. So.
Yeah, me too. It's my favorite type of season.
Yeah. Self-reflection. Finding out what it is that God wants to do in us, how he wants to pull us forward, all that stuff. It's good stuff. So
it's an introvert's dream.
Yes. Well, last week we talked through Deuteronomy, Lent 1, Deuteronomy, and in the system failure, it was about the food industry or food system and how we can be better stewards of that. And then kind of in the personal, the dead weight series, we talked about selfishness and entitlement. This week is Genesis 15. It's a pretty common passage that we've heard and we've talked about in school and in church. It's a really popular passage. In the system failure series, the theme that we're going with is education system. And in the dead weight series, it's about resentment, kind of an impatience or a lack of faith or clinging to expectations. So kind of keep that in mind as we read through the text. And as we discuss it, that's kind of the angles we're going to be going and how do we preach this text. So thanks for joining us. Right now, we're just going to kick back into it. Patrick, you want to go ahead and read through the passage for us?
Yeah. After these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision. Do not be afraid, Abram. I am your shield. Your reward shall be very great. But Abram said, O Lord God, what will you give me? For I continue childless, and the heir of my house is Eliezer of Damascus. And Abram said, you have given me no offspring, and so a slave born in my house is to be my heir. But the word of the Lord came to him, this man shall not be your heir. No one but your very own issue shall be your heir. He brought him outside and said, look toward heaven and count the stars. If you are able to count them, then he said to them, so shall your descendants be. And he believed the Lord, and the Lord reckoned it to him as righteousness. And then he said to him, I am the Lord who brought you from Ur of the Chaldeans to give you this land to possess. But he said, O Lord God, how am I to know that I shall possess it? And he said to him, bring me a heifer 3 years old, a female goat 3 years old, a ram 3 years old, a turtle dove, and a young pigeon. He brought them all these and cut them in two, laying each half over against the other. But he did not cut the birds in two. And when the birds of prey came down on the carcass, Abram drove them away. And as the sun was going down, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and a deep and terrifying darkness descended upon him. And when the sun had gone down and it was dark, a smoking firepot and a flaming torch passed between these pieces. On that day, the Lord made a covenant with Abram, saying, to your descendants I give this land, from the river of Egypt to the great river, the river Euphrates. And that is Genesis chapter 15, verses 1 through 12, 17 through 18.
So what jumps out at you first about this passage, Patrick? What is the thing that grabs a hold of you?
So immediately, one of the things that I was thinking about was just Abram's kind of justified impatience with Yahweh.
Yep.
I was actually trying to figure out how old he was at this point, like when Genesis 15. I know in Genesis 12 is when Abram has his first kind of initiation or intimate moment with Yahweh, and Yahweh makes this covenant with Abram. And then I think, then there's the whole issue with Lot and then his wife Sarai with Pharaoh. And I want to say that Hagar, I'm going to just look it up right now.
Yeah.
I think Ishmael is Genesis 16. Is that it? I don't remember. But like there's that whole, Genesis 16 is Ishmael. So this is like right before the Ishmael incident.
Right. God's like, hey, I'm going to give you an heir. He's like, oh, okay, great. That sounds awesome. No, like seriously, Abram, I'm going to give you an heir. Oh, okay. Right. And the next chapter, he's like, maybe this is how God's going to do it.
Right. He tried to figure out another way that God is going to work. But like the funny thing is that like really it's been about 20 years, I think, since the initial covenant between Yahweh and Abram. So I think it's a legitimate question of saying, hey, when is this going to happen? I'm getting older and I don't know what's going to take place. But then the way that Yahweh interacts and continues to reassure and comfort Abram, and then not only calls him to make a covenant, but I think like the traditional style of covenanting is that the weaker person walks through the carcasses and says like something along the lines like, whatever, if I break this covenant, then may what happened to these animals happen to me. Mm-hmm. But like here we don't read anything about Abram walking through. We hear of Yahweh going through.
Yeah.
So like it's a reversal of power mm-hmm. right off the bat.
Right. Yeah. God is putting his life on the line for Abram, for sure.
For Abram. Yeah. Like, I mean, so like how big of a, I mean, so in that sense, you're like, man, you're an idiot, Abram, for doing what you did with Ishmael. Yeah. Like you just had this huge covenant ceremony. And I don't know. So that was initially what stood out to me. What about you?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is because of that Susian treaty type thing, the passing of the pot, the fire pot through the animals, and God kind of taking it on himself as he's the one that's going to fulfill this for Abram. It's, you know, it's definitely one that hits at home because it's such a beautiful picture of God's sacrificial love for us. But I think also there's this sense that God is kind of giving Abram this picture of the future, and it's not very good. Even the sense that, you know, here's, you're going to have a child. Okay. That sounds really good. Oh, but then your descendants that are going to be as numerous as the stars, as you've already seen, you know, that they're going to be huge, but they're going to be oppressed. They're going to be slaves for 400 years. Like, well, God, if you can give me a child, can't you like protect them so they don't go into slavery? You know, so there's all this sense of like feeling that even in the sense of having this joy of this child, there's always this, there's also this fear of the future, which I think happens to all of us when we have children. Like, there's a joy of like, yes, you know, I've got two boys and I'm like, you know, super excited when they showed up, right? But there's also this fear of like, okay, I could totally mess them up and they could end up to be horrible human beings if I'm not careful, you know. So there's that looming future of, you know, or even in this sense, Abram knows the future to a certain extent. You know, he knows that they're going to be oppressed and they're going to be slaves. But there's also like that sense of like, is there hope for them? And yes, Yahweh provides this, I'm going to, you know, redeem them as he does in the story. And that they're going to return to the land that he's giving Abram. But I think even for me personally, like knowing that, having this kind of fear of what could happen, you know, like what does the future hold for my children? And then what does the future hold for our world? And what kind of world are my kids going to grow up in? And what kind of world are their kids going to grow up in? So that kind of is all packed in there for me. And which is one of the reasons why we kind of look at, why we're kind of looking at the education system, that there's like this sense where in the way that our education works currently is all about like just giving you information, giving you the academy, you know, giving you all this, this head knowledge about these certain subjects, but that's not actually helping people find jobs. We have a system where we have tons of college graduates that are living at home still because there's no jobs for them, that somehow the education system that was supposed to give them a leg up has now actually failed them. What can we do about that? How can we? And I think all that kind of boils down to this fear of the future, like this fear of our descendants not having a good world to live in, and how can we then commit together to value not only academic learning but also value art, athletics, spirituality, and how can we teach our kids to value all of that stuff, music, art, theater, as a way of seeing that it's all part of becoming a whole person, and becoming a better world is a world that values all you know, all growth, not just the academic growth. That's kind of some of the ways that we're going to be handling in this passage at Catalyst.
Well, and I think, I mean, so I'm going to come back to that, but I'm going to just briefly touch on the fact that the lectionary leaves out verses 13, 14, 15, and 16, which actually talk about Abram's descendants going into slavery for 400 years.
Okay. Okay.
So we didn't read it today. So if anybody's listening might be like, where did that come up? It actually comes up through verses 13, 14, 15, and 16. So that's something to understand and maybe add into your readings that Sunday. But then also with the whole education thing is that we find out that's one of the major issues. Like if you want to reduce crime rate in urban areas, or if you want to encourage social growth, education is the key. And so many people are not getting education, even in America. And we see the destructive forms of what's going on with the lack of education, with the lack of knowing or even preparing for the future. I mean, and you can tail this on even to last week's readings about food and how so many people are not just like, they're not just homeschooling, but they're home farming and permaculture. And they're learning the fact that like we have to get back to our original roots of what it means if we want to survive as a race.
Brad, the guy that did that has the farm now, he calls it reconnecting to your biological umbilical cord. Like reconnecting to the soil and the earth and getting back to just recognizing that you're this small piece of this big creation.
Right.
So how does this play out in the impatience and lack of faith? I guess, you know, there's a sense where, like we already talked, like you already mentioned that at the very next chapter, he's getting impatient with God and he's not saying, you know, he's not just being patient. You know, he's trying to take matters into his own hands. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the, like, there's so much resentment. I mean, in our society, and there's so much lack of patience. We're used to, I mean, we don't even have, like, I remember when internet was first introduced and it was dial up, you know, and so like you had to wait, but you didn't even have to wait that long. I mean, I don't remember how long you had to wait, but you had to wait for the dial tone and the ring up. And then like when you, when the internet came on, it was slow. You couldn't watch a video to save your life. And now, you know, when Netflix buffers for 2 seconds, you're like, ah, you know, like those are the rituals in our everyday life that are conditioning us. And that make us impatient people. We are used to, you know, hopping on a plane and flying across the country or getting in our car and being in another state within the next 6 hours. All of this stuff. And then information wise, we get it on a regular basis. Food, like we don't have to spend the time to prepare our food because we can just pay for somebody to make it for us. And we don't have to wait for our tomatoes to grow, you know, because we'll have tomatoes year round in our grocery stores. Like, so we have all these practices and habits that have conditioned us to be impatient people. And I mean, I don't remember where this verse is found, but you know, like God is not like, what is it? I'm just going to butcher it now. You know, he's slow to move, quick to act or something like that. But like where it's like where we do our God and our faith is concerned about the end game. And so we're concerned about trajectory. And if we start with impatience and if we want to get things done quickly, our trajectory is going to be skewed. And we're going to be clinging to our own expectations and what we want to see done. And the only way that we can really like actually cut that loose is to just once again remind ourselves that even our life here on earth, you know, 70 to 80 years, it's a lot longer than our ancestors lived. But even that is just like a blink of an eye in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. And so if it takes a lifetime to learn how to love, if it takes a lifetime to learn how to be loved, If it takes a lifetime to have a prayer answered, that's okay. It doesn't have to happen right away. And our faith calls us to trust, to obey what we know we're supposed to be doing, even if the results aren't instant gratification or even if they don't meet our needs right away. And just to stay consistent, because we're in it for the long haul. Yeah. It's not a sprint, it's an endurance. So I think that's kind of what we're going to be doing with this passage in Genesis. It's talking more along that line. And even the fact that, like, if you do read 13, 14, and 15, and 16, like, God is saying, I'm going to give you ancestors, or I'm going to give you descendants, and then I'm going to enslave them for 400 years. So just so you know, Abram, this is what I'm going to do, but I'm doing this for a reason or for a purpose.
Right.
And you're not going to know how it makes sense or how it plays out, but just trust me, because I'm putting it all in. So you put it all in. Mm-hmm. So that type of stuff, which in my mind, from my perspective, is pretty, pretty comforting.
Right. And I think too, like, you look at this as, you know, this book of Genesis written in retrospect, right? So, you know, for years they've been, you know, they're writing it after they're in the land and right. after their slavery. And I think that they did it on purpose to make sure that their ancestors remembered that,
right.
that God is not a God that is surprised or that is, you know, shocked by things, but one that is actively involved in whatever situation you find yourselves in. And he's always faithful, even in the midst of slavery, even in the midst of oppression, that he is still faithful and he is on the side of the oppressed to find justice and find freedom, even when it seems like he's not. I think that's interesting, even, you know, that they would, that kind of, as they're telling the story, be remembering that they were slaves in Egypt and that he did rescue them, you know? So it's good stuff. Yeah,
it is good stuff. Hey guys. Well, thanks for listening. Let us know if just talking through these passages help you. You can do that through Facebook/ Catchy Lecty or on our website, catchylecty.com, or you can reach out to either Jonathan or I personally. You can find me at faithcommunitynaz.church. or on Twitter at Padraic Glenn or Facebook at Padraic Glenn Engel. And we want to hear from you, but we also just want to know that what we do here can benefit you. Jonathan, where can they find you?
Yeah, you can find all the messages at Catalyst at catrow.org, catrow.org. And you can reach me at Twitter and Facebook, just at I Am Spring.
Great. Hey, thanks guys once again for listening. Grace and peace to you.